I think the question tonight for us is, how do we serve God? If you were asked a question about either your salvation, your faith, or your suffering, do we answer timidly, or do we answer with authority? Do we believe from the bottom of our heart that we're saved? And you know, how do we transmit that to people? I liked this morning's message from Dan, and he was talking about, you know, our task is to spread the word. We're to plant seeds. And the question is how do we do that? And I find that the loudest that we speak really is in our actions. It's not in the words. People won't even listen to your words until they see your actions. I'm reminded that young King David, long before he was a king, in his teens, I look at how he acted and the faith, and here was his whole country. Talk about peer pressure. They're all afraid of this Goliath character. And here's this young man, and what does he say? Why are you guys afraid? Our God is on our side, and look how powerful he is. We have the same feeling in us. We have the same God. Remember, one of the things that we're told is that we are of the royal priesthood. We are each priest. Believe it or not, each and every day, each and every one of us deliver a sermon to the world. And the question is how do we do that? How do we serve God? Do we serve God simply by going to church each week? By tithing? By being seen? Are we transformed? I'm convinced as a priest that we need to have spent time so that we know not only what doctrine we believe, but why we believe it, and the fact that we can defend it. I'm sure that almost everybody in this room has stood up here or in front of a class or taught a lesson. And you don't do it just without making some preparation ahead of time. The same thing is how we really ought to approach each and every day. We're given opportunities. We may not even recognize them. And that's part of the problem, is we need to recognize that we are truly given opportunities to serve each and every day. So, that being said, one of the things that we need to know and we need to learn for ourselves is, what do we believe? And why do we believe it? I love that adage that was said that regardless of how tall your grandfather was, you still have to do your own growing. And you think about that. I don't care what family you came from, how devout they are, or how right they have it, each of us has to make our own road. So, I think in today's world, there's so much made about keeping an open mind and not being rigid and not being opinionated. And while that's young and while you need to investigate all kinds of things, as you do figure out these things, you no longer, to me then, once you get to that point, an open mind is more like a vacuum than it is. You ought to come to some conclusion. You ought to have figured some of this out. You ought to put some of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together. And when you do, you might be accused of being opinionated. But just in a spiritual way, you need to be just that fixed. A question. How many of you go out and once you've made this up, In other words, once you have got this straightened out in your head as to why you have faith in our God, and people say, well, your mind is, you know, you're not thinking, you're not open. The question is, okay, do I go retest gravity every day? Or do I accept that once I finally got it in my head how gravity works, I don't need to go jump out of a 23rd story building to see that it still works? That's the same way we ought to be about our spiritual life. That is the same way we ought to be. We shouldn't be ashamed of, I'm sorry, I don't need to go do this sin just because I haven't done that particular one. I know where it leads. So, the point I'm trying to make is that be methodical. Get in your head why I do feel that way, why I really can defend the Lord and the faith that I have in this great God. Back to the question of, if you were asked, are you saved? Now, I think, and this isn't a bad thing, but I think that the Church of Christ tends to be more conservative than a lot of the world. And hence, I think we tend to try to be more humble. And unfortunately, that sometimes rolls over into how we answer questions. And so rather than speaking authoritatively, we might say, I hope, and I believe this. When in fact, we ought to be able to say, absolutely, we're saved by the grace of God. See, it's not our doing. It's because of what God has told us. It's because of His nature as to how we can be assured that we're saved. The aim ought to be, when we pass from this life, to see the face of God. And in Revelation 22, we're assured of that. And so, our perspective ought to be eternal, not earthly. And yet, far too many times I think we fall into that trap of thinking earthly. In one of those, people will ask questions, about pain, about suffering, about why bad things happen, and why they happen to the just as equally as the unjust. And while in some ways this is hard to answer, it gives us good opportunity. Like I said from the beginning, our actions are how we really speak. And so the question really is when we do go through pain, when we go through trials, when we go through suffering, how do we speak? How do we show the glory of God? How do we really show we have that strength within us? And so regardless of what it is we go through, we will go through it differently than an unsaved person. Think about the story of Job. When you look at Job, he lost everything. 10 children. And at the end of that story, we see that everything was double. And he wound up with 10 more children. And I've heard people say, but he lost the first 10 children. He can't, there's no way you can replace that. You see, and I believe that Job's vision was heavenly. It wasn't earthly. That's an earthly view. Job knew he was going to see his kids in heaven. He knew where they were. That ought to be our focus. When we go through a trial or a tribulation, and I'll step aside here for a second and talk about 10 years or so ago, I found I had cancer. And there was a certain strength that, and a peace of mind that I knew regardless of what was going to happen, that God was with me. Well, the thing that we need to know, and the thing that I learned from this experience, was that other people were, in fact, watching. I had an acquaintance that was not yet saved. And he could not understand why this just absolutely didn't devastate me. And it was in watching how I handled that. But the reason I handled it the way I did was because I had God on my side. I had his strength. I know Rush Limbaugh talks about how he's given, you know, the talent on loan from God. But that's the truth. We do have strength. We do have peace. And we ought to be glorifying God. I mean, frankly, who better to suffer than a saved again Christian? The comparison ought to be so stark, there should be no question. Not that, and you know, that being said, it wouldn't be any different. I mean, people are still going to suffer, but if they saw how we responded and if we truly responded, like I say, if our sermons were so clear, bold, and absolutely based on God's grace, not ours. I don't think you can picture the difference of effect that would have on people. Too oftentimes people claim to be Christians, and they're, I would call, nominal Christians from a standpoint of you really can't tell that much difference. God is in control. We don't always understand exactly why. And I'm making no claim that I do understand how God works or why he does what he does. I know his thoughts are incomprehensible to me. They're far greater than I am. But I do have the faith that he is in control and know how the end of the story reads so that I know where our strength should come from. I don't know how many people are aware, but each and every day on this planet, roughly 154,000 people die. And I find people in pain, or where they've lost a loved one or someone else, they look at it as unjust. They look at it. And so my question to you is, how could we possibly sit there and judge which of the 154,000 were either just deaths or unjust? I mean, when I stopped and thought about that, I thought, how ludicrous for me to even think about, well, this is not right. What we need to know is that God is in control. Everything happens with his permission, or caused by him. And there really isn't much for us to fear. I've said this before, but I'll repeat it because I think it's important. People believe that you can't take things to heaven. And that is just so absolutely untrue. You can take your family members, you can take your children. They have to be saved. And that's part of our task, is how do we prepare them to withstand the onslaught of what they're going to hear, what they're going to see. Part of it is, do we walk the talk or do we just speak the words? Are we hypocrites or do we, in fact, walk the talk? We don't have to be perfect. None of us are. But we do have to make the effort to live the words, to walk that talk. Every time I've come across somebody that did that, it was just such a breath of fresh air. It was, in fact, different. You don't find that in the world. You know, I find it much more common in this place. But when you look at the small group that we are, and you look at the world, we're small in number. There's a story told about an incident back in the 1500s. And I believe the quote goes, it was by Hugh Latimer to Nicholas Ridley. And they were both arrested. They were Protestants, and they were basically, they weren't Catholic. And Queen Mary was putting to death anybody that wasn't Catholic. And all they had to do was denounce their beliefs. And they were sentenced to burn at the stake. And Hugh Latimer turned to Ridley, and he said, "Play the man, Ridley, for this day we shall light a candle in England that will never be put out." I think that would get people's attention. I'm not saying we'll have to be burned at the stake by any image. But if you look at, I remember a few years ago, there was an unconscionable shooting where 5 children were killed. It was in an Amish community. And I don't know if you very followed the outcome of that, but by the way that the parents acted throughout that, the media just couldn't understand it. They walked the talk. There wasn't vengefulness. There was what I would consider true Christianity in action. We have a book, a hymnal. And one of those hymns in there has always affected me. It's 561. "It is well with my soul. When peace like the river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." This was written by a man that just lost his children. We know when our children die after saved, where we're going to see him again. We have comfort that not the whole world doesn't have. Our job is to plant seeds. Our job is to live a life in such a way that we do stand apart. We're a peculiar people. I think I heard someplace, I think it was some meeting or something that was mentioned anyway. But it's right. We are a peculiar people. We need to stand out. When I think about, you know, the invitation we have each week, and when I think about, I just can't comprehend the suffering that Jesus went through. And when I look at the suffering he did for us, for you and for me, it just, like I say, I cannot understand God's ways, but I do have the faith that he did it for us. And that when we do accept that, that there's such a difference in the world that we have that no one else has. We need to share that. We wouldn't hide if we had found or discovered a cure for cancer. We wouldn't hide that from people. We wouldn't covet it. We found a far greater cure than any cancer that ever was. We need to share it.